Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 21, delivered on November 11, 2015. The title of this lecture is Component Costs of Capital.
Today, Component Costs of Capital. This is the follow-on to the lecture on Monday. I showed you these formulas before, but I will formalize them and apply, do an application, something like what you'll see in the test, the online quiz and test. Make sure you're comfortable with using these formulas. First things first, the components of capital are debt and equity, of course. Now, on the debt side, your cost of debt after taxes is going to be the before cost, before tax cost of debt times 1 minus the marginal tax rate of the company. So in other words, the actual effective cost of debt to the firm goes down as the firm's tax rate goes up, essentially encouraging the leverage in large corporations and differentially discouraging it in a small corporation, so that you would probably see a higher debt to total asset ratio in a larger corporation than you would, all other things being equal, in a small corporation, because you're not getting nearly as much of a break. Now, on the equity side, and I'm going to break this down into preferred. They're all the same formula. There's a general formula I gave you last time, but let me give it to you in its pieces. The cost of preferred equity is going to be the dividend over the price of the security. All there is to it. That's all there is to it. Now, the cost of common equity would be the dividend one period out divided by the price of the stock right now, plus, after you do that fraction, plus the growth rate. Do be a little careful with this, because sometimes the problem will give you the current dividend, so you have to grow it one period. So if you're given the current dividend, you would want to multiply that by 1 plus G to grow it one period out, so that it's sitting one period out to bring it back in the present value sense. I know there is one I noticed on the test where they say the dividend a year from now will be. If you see that, then you've already got your D1. Don't be tricked. Sometimes it'll be they'll give you the dividend just paid was. Sometimes they'll say the dividend next year will be. So make sure you know which it is, so you know whether to grow the number they're giving you one period, or to just use the number they're giving you because it's already out there one period. One way or the other, these are the costs of the different components. Now, remember I told you something, that in real life, this is actually the cost of your existing shareholders. This is the cost of the equity that is already, the common stock that's already out there bouncing around. If you are talking about the cost of new equity, then you would have to take this P0 minus the float. Usually it's given as a percentage. So like the price of the stock right now is $30. The float, but if you were about to have to issue new stock to raise capital for projects, you would say 10% float on it. You would take $30 minus $3 to get $27. So the cost of new equity is actually even more expensive than the cost of existing equity. So with that in mind, you could say, okay, a company has the current price of BDG common is $18 per share. The company just paid a 20-cent per share dividend that is expected to grow 5% for the foreseeable future. For the foreseeable future. What is the cost of equity to the firm? In a case like this, what you would have, I have given you the price of the stock is $18. The dividend right now, the dividend just paid, and again, watch out whether it says this is the dividend next year or the dividend just paid. In this case, I said it just paid a dividend of 20 cents, and the growth rate of the dividends is 5%. So in order to use this formula right here, the first thing we'll have to do is get D1, which would be D0 times 1 plus G, which in this case would be 20 cents per share times 1 plus 0.05, which would mean that the next dividend is 21 cents per share. So that's what you would use in the numerator. Well, getting that all done, then, we would simply have the cost of equity, the cost of common, in this case, would be 21 cents per share divided by the price of the stock, which is $18 per share, plus 0.05. Flogging that out here on your calculator would get you by you 0.21 divided by 18 plus 0.05, and you get a 6.17% cost of equity. That's the cost of equity. Now, taking it along, I don't know. Let's try this. BDG preferred par $40 per share just paid a 2 dollar dividend. And BDG debt carries a coupon of 3.5%. BDG marginal tax rate is 40%. Do some work here. And by the way, BDG debt. The debt is currently selling at 104% of face and it has $25 million in debt outstanding. Just take you through a full problem here. I might as well just do the whole hog problem. BDG has $4 million in market value of preferred outstanding. Preferred outstanding, and we'll just go over here. Let's say the BDG has 3 million common shares outstanding. Through the grinder, let you get all that down here. Then I'm going to bang out all these different things. First things first here. We've got the cost of common. We already did that one. The cost of the preferred is going to be pretty easy. That's just a $2 dividend divided by $40. Is that right? Yeah. So that's 5%, is it? 5.0%. Nothing hard about that. And then the after-tax cost of debt is going to be, 3.5% times 1 minus 0.4. So hammering them all out here, that's 5% for preferred, and then 3.5% coupon times 0.6 would give you 3.5. Seriously, come on. 3.5 times 0.6 is a 2.1% after-tax cost of debt. These are your component costs of capital, that easily. Don't get all worried about it. Just crank through them when you see them on a quiz or a test. Just bang through, use the formula for each piece of it. And now we can do something, finally. We can actually get the weighted average cost of capital of this company. Get the weighted average cost of capital. First of all, we got to get the value of the equity, or the value of the debt, plus the value of the equity. Now, there are two pieces to the equity. And these are market values, not book values. Don't let any problem bluff you. If they start talking about book values, it's just a bluff, because the book value is irrelevant. So the value of the debt would be, how much did I say they have outstanding? $25 million? So that would be $25 million times 104%. So the value of the debt is 25 times 104. Seriously? Oh, 26. $26 million. Okay? Now, the value of equity. Value of preferred. Now, generally, unless there is something that's telling you differently, you don't worry about the market because it's probably floating close to par anyway. So you don't worry about for preferred. You just put that little sucker down there, 4 million. Now, however, the value of the common is its market cap. Value of the common here would be, this company has 3 million shares outstanding at $18 a share. So that would be 3 million shares times $18 per share. So that would be what? 42 million? 44 million? 54. Whoa. Okay, 54 million. So the total value would be 26 and 4 is 30 plus 54 is $84 million. You got that part? $84 million. Now, this is way too much like work. Okay, now, the weight of debt, the weight of preferred, and the weight of common. The weight of debt would be 26 divided by 84. The weight of preferred would be 4 million divided by 84 million. And the weight of common would be 54 million divided by 84 million. Now you hope those three numbers add up to one. You hope those three numbers add up to one, because the weight should do that. So it's 26 divided by 84. And I do two decimal places here, 30.95%. 4 divided by 84 would be 4.76%. And 54 divided by 84 would be 64.29%. Do a quick check to make sure those numbers add up to 100. Thank God they do. But just do that as a quick check. Now, this is about as bad as it gets on that exam, on tests for chapter 13 and online. This is about as bad as it gets. Now, we can get our weighted average cost of capital now. Weighted average cost of capital is going to be the weight of debt. We'll just do weight of debt times the cost of debt after tax, plus the weight of preferred times the cost of preferred, plus the weight of common times the cost of common. That's all there is to it. But you have to do each step, and it can kill you if you make a mistake along the way, because then you're dead right here at this point. But the weight of equity is 6.17%. Oh, well, the weight of equity. I'm sorry, the weight of debt. Let me do the weight of debt. 0.3095, and watch out about rounding here, times the cost, after-tax cost of debt, 2.1%, plus the weight of preferred, which is 0.0476, times the cost of preferred, which was 5%, plus the weight of common, which is 0.64429, times, seriously, if I would write things in linear order, 6.17%, there would be your weighted average cost of capital. Now, pushing that into the calculator here, see if I can actually do this.
I would go 0.0395, .3095 times 2.1% plus 0.0476 times 5% plus 0.6429 times 6.17%. I'll be darned, I got it. The weighted average cost of capital of this company, BDG, is 4.85%. There's its whack. I'd like to say it's as easy as that, but I mean, it's just arithmetic, but you can really stumble in that arithmetic. If you make a little mistake, it just blows up on you in a problem like that. Now, again, as I had told you before, there's a tendency in some companies to find net present values by using the weighted average cost of capital. Another interesting thing is that sometimes you will see a company use the WACC as the hurdle rate. Remember I mentioned that hurdle rate idea? Well, there are some companies that will use the weighted average cost of capital as a hurdle rate. Neither of them is a great idea, but it is done out there. And as a matter of fact, there was here's something, and they mentioned this in the book, and you'll see it on a test, but let me give you the heads up on what's going on here. Sometimes a company will look to acquire another company. It's a hostile takeover or a friendly takeover. And what they've got to do is they've got to figure out how much it's going to cost to take this company and what the free cash flow pattern will be after they've taken over the company. So in other words, it's just a classic net present value question. So the question it boils down to this. What discount rate, if they were using WACC to do discounting, would they use the weighted average cost of capital of their own company, or would they use the probably higher weighted average cost of capital of the target? In other words, suppose that you had a situation. I'll get some of this off the board. I hope everyone's got that right here. Suppose that you had a situation. We have a company that calculates net present values using the weighted average cost of capital. It's just the way they do it. So you got, here is the predator. This is going to be a hostile takeover. There's a predator out there. And this is the target. Now the predator is evaluating, if we get this target, we are going to be able to claim this cash flow, the free cash flow from this company. So so what is the net present value of the free cash flow we would get, and how does that compare with the cost that we would bear to take this company? So we've got the predator. Let's say that the predator's weighted average cost of capital is 12.9%. Suppose that the target's weighted average cost of capital is 16.3%. And so then we need to figure out what the free cash flow pattern is going to be. Free cash flow 1, free cash flow 2, et cetera, out, whatever. And we want to discount that back and see what the present value of that is. The question would be, which weighted average cost of capital should the predator use for evaluating the present value of the free cash flows of the target? Should the predator use its own weighted average cost of capital, assuming that, well, we'll take it and then it'll have our weighted average cost of capital, or should the predator use the target's internal, before the acquisition, weighted average cost of capital? or should it use an average of them? What call it? What would you say? Exactly. You use the targets. Because that is essentially a measure of the risk of that animal as it stands. This takes us to a larger point, interestingly enough. Companies, as a good rule, companies should actually not have a weighted average cost of capital that means a whole lot anyway. A large company should have several weighted average costs of capital. What it should be doing is it should have a weighted average cost of capital by division. Or in some way, taking that company apart and looking at the different pieces of it as existing companies on their own. Essentially, the parent company is like a, sort of considered like a portfolio. And its divisions, or even its projects, are the components of the portfolio. And therefore, each one of them should stand on its own, in a way, have its own weighted average cost of capital. In some sense, although it's kind of hard to do it, to have its own beta, in fact. Yeah, go ahead. Dear God, what you would do is you would have to say, okay, let's say we have equity. The market value of the equity of our company is $100 million. We have four divisions. Probably what you would do is look at the value of each division standing on its own and allocate that market value in that way. Now, how do you do that? Well, you know, there are ways like, you know, swinging a dead cat over your calculator. There are ways that you use calculus and differential equations, stochastic partial differential equations, but in some way to make each part of the company. Now, there's an argument against this. Here's the argument against this. A company by division, those divisions would be very different animals standing on their own from what they are in the synergistic environment of the business itself, the larger company. Now, that larger company might add value by its existence to the divisions through its size, its name, its brand, its branding capabilities, its ability to handle the taxes and the legal stuff. It might also diminish the company. That's the theory behind spinning off companies, spinning off divisions, is that they would be more valuable on their own than they are in the context of the business. So the idea of divisionalizing has its merit, but it also has the downside that you're treating this division of the company as a standalone entity when, as a standalone entity, it would be nothing like what it is now as part of the larger corporation in which it is embedded. And so the argument goes back and forth. The real question, though, is why are they using the WACC for this kind of discounting cash flows to begin with? Therein lies the real question. Why aren't you using the capital asset pricing model to get your discount rates for figuring out net present value? In other words, in this target issue, the predator and the target, why are you even worrying about the WACC? Find out what the beta of the target is and get the discount rate that would be appropriate based upon the capital asset pricing model from the beta instead of this WACC business. But know this. Returning to the Modigliani-Miller paradox, in other words, why do companies have any equity if debt is cheaper than equity? And the bottom line of that was that the debt gets more expensive as you incur more of it. A deeper issue. One of the final points of this entire course for you, though, is this. The cost of a company can be broken down, and you saw this in economics, and I think I even mentioned it in this course too. Costs can be broken down into variable costs and fixed costs. So you remember you have the simplistic model, revenue minus cost of goods sold makes your gross income, and then minus your selling, general, and administrative expenses, and your depreciation. God, I hate even writing that. Makes your operating income, or in other words, your EBIT. And then you subtract off your interest payments. And that makes your earnings before taxes minus your taxes. And that makes your net income. This simplistic model. But cost of goods sold is how much each unit cost you that you sold. That's a variable cost. It varies. You sell more, cost of goods sold goes up. You sell less, cost of goods sold goes down. Selling, general, and administrative expenses, those are going to be probably pretty fixed. Those are your, yeah, go ahead. Well, yes, but we're talking accounting here, so we're not talking about important things. But we will be here in a second. Easy. Yes, I've gotten real. I mean, accountants have gotten ugly with me. One of them actually gnawed on my shin once. One of them said hurtful things about me. But okay, here's the deal. But never mind depreciation. It's not real. It's so not real, I can't even talk about it. But interest, is interest a variable cost or a fixed cost? What is it? Your interest expense. Does it go up with your sales and down with your sales, or is it the same thing you pay every month or every half year? Yeah, it's a fixed cost. Therein lies the important thing. Now, taxes are a variable. Lower income, a lower taxable income, lower taxes, higher taxable income, higher taxes. So the fixed cost, the variable costs here, that's a variable cost right there. And that is a variable cost right there. But in here, that SG&A is a fixed cost, and interest is a fixed cost. So in other words, variable costs create no magnification effects. Sales go up, variable costs go up. Doesn't change your net income. Sales go down, variable costs go down. They in and of themselves are not causing any abnormal thing to happen. But I want you to imagine, madam, you've gotten your first job when you graduate. You're really getting a great salary. You're getting $2,000 a month. That's $24,000 a year. Are we talking good times? I think we are. Okay, $2,000 a month. Now, your variable costs are, let's say, 40% of your income. So if your income goes up, and if it goes down, well, you don't pay as much. Your variable costs go. But suppose you have fixed costs, your student loan payments, your utility bills, your rent, your subscription to Office 365. Your subscription, I always worry about where my phone is. Your phone, that's a fixed cost. Your internet connection is a fixed cost. They don't say, well, you're making more, so you'll pay more, or, oh, you lost your job, so you're paying less, so don't worry. It's not like that. It's those fixed costs that can destroy you. It is the fixed costs that are the damage that creates magnification of the volatility of a company, of a company's cash flows, and therefore the volatility. I want you to come up here for a second. Okay? You are Mr. Variable Cost. This is a rubber chicken.
I have a rubber chicken.
I want you to take this rubber chicken. Now, variable, pull back. Da. Pull with me. Come on. But da 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 da.
This is good. Yes.
Release. You are Mr. Fixed Cost. You can't dance.
True.
Hold this. Just stand there.
Okay.
Look at it. Did you see what happened? He jerked his stomach out of the chicken. Look at this chicken now. It's gotten the stuffing pulled out of it. I know, right? Here, grab this. Grab it. Not there. You're choking the chicken, man. There. Good. Okay. Look at that chicken. It's all unstuffed because the fixed cost destroyed it. The variable cost, the chicken was happy. Did you hear that chicken? Bawk, bawk, bawk. The bottom line is that the fixed costs are what causes a company to go into catastrophe. This is why, for example, a service kind of company can survive better because a service company's costs are much more leaning toward variable than fixed. But a heavy manufacturing industrial company, it has more of those big fixed equipment costs. That makes it so that it has more risk, more volatility in cash flow, therefore more volatility in price. This is why companies get rid of workers like you. Because I can hire you, you're outsourced, and it's a variable cost because you work at a call center on the south side of Toledo. And if business is good, I hire more of you people. If business is bad, I just don't contract for as much. But with you, I mean, if business is good, I pay you. If business is bad, I pay you. You're fixed. That's what this whole thing about getting rid of your fixed costs, outsourcing, turns fixed costs into variable costs. Another one where you see this, Microsoft now rents you Office software. Adobe rents you Office software. You are then handed the fixed cost. And you will pay it, which causes you to bear the risk, a greater risk in your bottom line cash flow, because that's just one more fixed cost on your personal income statement. And they've moved it off theirs. They stick you with it. No, I'm just not going to buy that subscription to Office anymore. Well, there goes all of your .doc files, your .xls files. They're all gone. You are forced to pay the fixed cost. The companies transfer risk to you and get it off their shoulders by going to subscription bases in their things. Someday you are going to have heart disease. You'll also be impotent. And there will be other issues with you too. That nodule, it's really disgusting on your back. You're going to have your meds no matter what. You don't have time for a nodule, okay? You need those meds and you will buy them. It becomes a fixed cost. It creates greater risk for you because, well, I'm not making as much this month, so I just won't buy those meds. Uh-oh, nodule coming. Uh-oh, Quasimodo. You understand what's happening? With a company, debt creates in and of itself, inheres to that component of the capital. I'll fix you later. Inheres to it a creation of risk. So yes, debt brings down your weighted average cost of capital, but at the same time, inherent in debt is another fixed cost the company has to pay, whether it's got good sales or bad sales, it has to pay it.
That's one of the life lessons, is that it's easy to sign on for something now that imposes a fixed cost on you later. But what you find out is that that creates incredible risk in the future, in bad times for you, because that fixed cost is going to be imposed. So as this company's life goes through the business cycle and through an industry cycles and competitive waves, the problem is that this interest is going to be there for that company to pay, whether the times are good or the times are lean. Don't just believe me. Take it from the chicken. That's all I have for you. Go home.